Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Frank Tiger said, professionalism is knowing how to do it, when to do it, and doing it. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who's a professional and is doing it. Today's playmaker is a talent agent, a recording artist, actor, and stand-up comedian. With us today is a CEO whose company has been twice awarded spots in the top 20% on the Inc. 5000 list of America's fastest-growing companies. This great playmaker is Krista Haverstock-Colson. She's president and founder of C Agency. Well, since 1997, Krista has blurred the line between talent and agent by living large on both sides of it at the same time. On the agent side, for over two decades, Krista has dedicated herself to the management, consultation, and representation of the busiest professional keynote speakers and the finest corporate entertainment anywhere, booking millions of dollars annually in talent into corporate and association events. In 2009, Krista founded C Agency, an elite team of corporate event professionals, speaker managers, and agents. C Agency is now one of the industry's fastest-growing speaker management agencies. And on the talent side of the line, Krista is also a successful improviser and actor, co-founding Dallas's premier all-female improv comedy troupe, Heroin Addiction. In 2012, she co-authored Recipes for a Funner Life. She's also done time as a stand-up comedian, voted a top four finalist and wildcard pick in Edmonton's 2007 Last Comic Standing. Later that year, she was invited to open for Carolyn Ray and Kevin Nealon. Wow, a lot to talk about. Krista, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
My goodness, that was quite the introduction.
Yes, it was. Well, let me ask you this to start off. How does a Canadian from Edmonton, Alberta, marry a Cornhusker from Nebraska and end up with an award-winning company in Dallas, Texas?
Wow, some people might call it the best luck. Some people might call it the worst luck, right? Born and raised in Edmonton, Alberta, and actually was trained, went to school as an elementary educator, elementary music teacher. And my husband at the time wanted to go to get his master's here in Dallas, Texas. And so we ended up here. But
were you living in Edmonton at the time?
We were, yeah. We were living in Edmonton. No kids yet, so we were like freewheeling. And, you know, as an educator, you can kind of teach in the country where you are. And that was Canada. So as much as my aspirations were to teach in the States, I couldn't do that. So my brother is a professional speaker. He's married to someone who owned and operated one of the biggest speakers bureaus in the country. And I didn't know what a speakers bureau was, but when I wasn't able to teach in the States, she said, do you want to come work for me? And I said, what's a speakers bureau? She said, we'll figure it out when you get here. And so I was able to come and consult to the company and was able to get a visa for it very quickly. And so that's, I fell backwards into this industry, as a lot of people do, actually. I moved here and then, met my current husband, and I call Nebraskans the Canadians of America.
There you go.
I don't know how they'd feel about that, but it's a great place, and he's an amazing guy, and we have a ton in common, even though we're not from the same country.
Did the schools not want to hire you as a teacher because you were Canadian? Or was there something else was keeping them from hiring you to be a teacher?
That's something no one's ever asked me. This was not the school's decision. I applied at several schools, had four job offers, accepted one, and then very naively at the time started working towards a visa, which just never happened. We tried for months, 6-8 months, and it just never came to pass. And so, you do kind of fall backwards into the best stuff sometimes. And I do miss teaching, but I'm sure after having been out of it for 22 years or so, I've romanticized it quite a bit. But I love this industry I'm in now, and there's so much of the same element of educating and helping people. It's just the kids are bigger.
I was going to ask you this question later, but because you brought that out, you help your clients with bookability secrets to help them become professional speakers, remove barriers to bookings, win more business. So your teaching probably goes to what you're doing with your clientele too. Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, there's just so many of the same organizational skills and educating skills that I applied in the classroom and that I learned about at university. And I definitely use that with the speakers on my roster and the speakers that I consult and train. And I do, and, you know, even you had mentioned in the introduction, so it's not a spoiler, but, you know, I did comedy, stand-up, and improv. And so there's definitely a strong performance element when I get to speak to speakers about speaking. And so I've got, it kind of runs the gamut for me.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Is the fact that you can do comedy and improv, is that because of your ability to as a teacher, that you have the ability to stand up in front of people and be comfortable with them?
Yeah, they all go hand in hand. I mean, I did comedy and improv because I'm the funniest one in the family, and that was just for my brother. I said that. But I have two older brothers. As I said, one of them's a speaker. Actually, they're both speakers. One of them's a professional speaker, Hall of Fame, Canadian and American. They're both very funny, so we always fight for the right to be the funniest in the family.
Well, as a speaker, anytime you're speaking in front of a group of people, comedy comes
so
into it if you're going to be a halfway effective speaker.
100%.
You have to have some way to lighten up everything.
You got to roll with the punches too. Like if they're about to introduce you and they've just let go of the CEO and they're like, and now presenting our motivational speaker, you have to be able to on the fly really make sure that you are basing what you're saying on what's happening in reality, in real time. And that's improv.
Well, which came first? We're going to talk about more about your business in a moment. But which came first? Was it singing? Was it improv? comedy, improv go together. Which came first as far as your professionalism on that side of it?
My singing came first. I've been singing since I was, could talk, basically. So, yeah, that came first. But I've come to learn that comedy and improv is just something that you learn through your life. I think anything, singing, improv, comedy, it can be taught, but I think some people have a natural disposition to those things. I'm sure I could be taught to draw, but my son has a natural propensity for it. He just picks up a pen and he can do it. So I think that's the same way with singing and improv and comedy.
So your business started, 2009?
Mm-hmm.
Were you working for some other company, booking speakers?
Mm-hmm.
What caused you to make the decision to go off and do it on your own?
It was a week. This is awesome. It's so midlife crisis. It was a week before my 40th birthday. And I'd always thought that there was really a tremendous market for the management side of it. So many speakers needed help to become, and the word that I use constantly, which isn't really a word, but bookable, bookability was a real problem. And so when I was on the bureau side, what I spent a great majority of my time doing and what led to my success as a bureau agent was repurposing and repackaging speakers' materials to make it easier to book for the meeting planner. So I spent so much of my time doing that. And on the speakers bureau side, right, like a client will come to you and say, we need, we have X amount of money for an agricultural speaker, but they have to be, European, African American. Like, and I'm being silly, but at the same time, you have to like go find that. And those person's materials are not going to necessarily be that of the caliber of someone who speaks 80 to 100 times a year. So I would have to take those and make them look like someone who spoke 80 to 100 times a year so I could book them. And then that got really tiring. So I'm like, what if I did this for like a dozen people instead of all of them? And that's how the transition happened. And it was very simple. I sent 4 text messages, made a couple phone calls, and overnight had clients, speakers to work with.
Well, let me ask you this. As you were, explain that to me. Do you book yourself?
Oh, God, no. No.
You're in Dallas with heroin addiction.
Yes.
And for those listening, since you can't see it spelled, it's heroine addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do most of your onstage work locally?
Yes, and one of our girls has moved away and another has had babies. And so let's just say we're on hiatus right now. And we lost our home club, which was actually the impetus for us having to kind of take a break. But yeah, and you know, when I used to say, "Do you book yourself?" I said, "God, no." And I'm like, "Well, actually, I suppose I did." So, you know, we had an event at SMU for women's forum. I think it was a women's leadership thing. And yeah, so I was able to do the contract for that. It was very strange.
Are you doing any acting on the side?
Right
Right
now,
now.
Yeah, like right now I am not, but I've done some voiceover work recently and did a couple of shorts, which was really fun. And it was all kind of, it's funny because I don't know if other people experience this, but I feel like my life goes in like compartmentalized waves. Like, here's the music part of your life. And then it turned into, here's the comedy and improv part of your life. And now it's like, here's the, you know, the career, whatever part of your life. And so, you know, I was doing a lot of music until about a year ago. And that came after I was doing a lot of comedy, and that came after I was doing a lot of music. And I don't know, it's very compartmentalized. I would like it to integrate just a tiny bit better, but so far it's just like all or nothing.
Well, you've been in this business for a little over 20 years,
Yes.
and you've had your own business for just under 10 years.
Yes.
What was the biggest obstacle you ran into or have run into in your business that was something you really had to get over but weren't expecting it?
You know, there's a phrase that I've heard. It's actually an AA phrase. It's a terminal uniqueness. And I think I suffer from terminal uniqueness because I will think that I am the only one in the history of anything that's ever gone through this certain thing. And then I tell these stories and people go, "Oh yeah, that's so common." I'm like, "What? How is that possible?" Like, so for me, I think running a small business, you're not good at everything, but you have to do everything. And so you have to figure out a way to enjoy, well, not even enjoy it, do it well and make the company run well on it. And so there's a tremendous amount of delegating. And I think for me, the biggest obstacle that I had to overcome was my biggest weaknesses, because your biggest strengths are your biggest weaknesses. And I think one of my biggest strengths is that I love people a lot. And I trust people a lot. And on the flip side, when you do that, I think you get a little blinded to things. And so, a couple years ago, I got sideswiped pretty hard by some people that I worked with. So that has been the biggest obstacle, is seeing my shortcomings in, you know, not knowing everything. I can delegate pretty well, but I think that perhaps I overtrust people. I don't use as much discernment as I should. And then now for me, the biggest challenge is the rebound from that, like, you know, just the heart part of it. But you know, I'm grateful for it. Oh wow, I'm so grateful for it. Because we're so much stronger and better and everything right now. It's something that definitely needed to happen, but I had a dream about it last night. I dream almost every night about it. So I'm definitely working through it.
It's interesting how, in many cases, people don't plan their lives from 30, 40 years ago to be where they are today.
Not at
Things
all.
happen.
Yes.
Was there any mentor, anybody? You mentioned your brother, who's a speaker, but any mentor that you had that helped you along the way or got you to where you are right now?
Plenty. Absolutely. I wouldn't be in this industry if it weren't for my brother and my sister-in-law, because, you know, they 100% saw a need for me to get to the States, and they knew that I could consult and do what I needed to do and get a visa for it. And you know, watching the people that I worked with at the Speakers Bureau do what they did and just observe. And I know people poured into me when they didn't have to, because it was 100% commission. You don't have to mentor people. You know, you do your things, so you can get a paycheck, right? But I had lots of people do that for me there. And then all along the way, this is a very tight-knit industry. And people are so willing to help, and that has made me want to be more helpful, and mentor other people. So yeah, I mean, I can't point to one person because that would be totally unfair to the hundreds of other people that did.
Then what I hear from listening between the lines is anybody you meet mentors you in a certain way if you're learning something from them.
I think that's really important to make sure that you're just super aware of the things that you want to be and the things that maybe you don't want to be. And I had a sticky on my computer for a long time that said, keep your opinions out of your ears, because it's really easy to get singularly focused on who you think you should be. And I don't know, at some point your own style comes out. I tell this to speakers, actually, when I do have an opportunity to speak to them, that and it's a loose quote because I heard it a long time ago at a music conference when I was at a performing conference. But it's admire your heroes, but don't be held captive by them. I don't know. Do you know that quote?
I've heard something like that before.
Right.
You should have somebody to look up to and admire, but you have to have your own style.
Yeah.
You can't do their style. That's what I've read into that quotation.
I think it was Salieri ended up, a lot of his music sounded like Mozart. Or was it? There was a Beethoven. I read that. Anyway, sorry, I don't know the specifics on it, but a lot of people just end up at the beginning a little bit sounding and looking like they're heroes until they have their own voice. And then I'm sure over the years, I've been doing this 21 years, I'm sure some of the people that have come and gone through my doors probably sound and look a lot like I do. And I probably sound and look a lot like the people that I worked with. And I think it's kind of a way of, it's my responsibility, I think, to mentor people by the things that I find important for our industry, and model that, because people are watching whether you like it or not. Right. And maybe that's the teacher in me coming out.
But to a certain degree, you're also a coach too, because every time you put a speaker into a program,
sure,
that person's representing you.
Yes.
Even though you may not be able to do what they do, they're representing you. So mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some coaching that you do with them to make
Lord.
Sure they're where they need to be.
Yeah, I just sent out to speakers bureaus actually a couple of weeks ago the Never Will We Ever list. It's basically our pledge to speakers bureaus about the things we will and will not do, mostly the will nots. And it's things that drive meeting planners crazy. So yes, my speakers are definitely a representation of me, because my reputation is inextricably linked to them. And I've had to pass and dismiss speakers, pass on and dismiss speakers for that reason alone.
Whether they're good or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is reputation over income for me all day long.
Well, you have a stage presence because you sing, you act, mm-hmm. you do improv. Are you a, I don't know if I should use the word introvert, but are you a person that likes being by herself when you can be, or do you have a need to be in front of people?
That's a good question. I'm an ENFJ or an ENTJ on the Myers-Briggs.
I'm INTJ.
Oh, there you go. Are you an introvert? That's funny. I wouldn't have thought that. But yeah, I think that I mean, as many times as I've thought I might be an introvert, I think that I'm inherently extroverted by nature. But I do my best mental processing when I'm just like kind of in the zone by myself. So I can be by myself, but I do feel most energized when I've been around people.
When it comes to improv and doing comedy, do you see your success coming from experiences you've had? In other words, the more experiences you have, the better you are at improv, coming up with ideas, because you have all these different things to pull from.
I think so. I do. I think that the best improvisers I've seen have a lot of training and a really good memory. And I'm thinking of a couple of people specifically. They just are up on current events and they know the mannerisms of all the celebrities, and their life experience is so deep. I realized that I loved improv so much. I did stand-up comedy, didn't love it. To be honest, I really didn't love it. I enjoyed it when it went well, but when it went poorly, I'm way too sensitive for that. My skin is way too thin. But when I got into improv, I realized that my biggest heroes, as far as comedy, my biggest comedy heroes in movies or whatever, are the improvisers. They all had improv experience, you know, the SNL greats. So, I think that their life experience definitely, it would, I think if I had a better memory, I'd be unstoppable.
Well, we've talked about your on stage work. How about writing?
Yeah.
Are you a passionate writer?
I do love writing, actually. I love it. I was even just thinking about this last night, how I've been doing a ton of writing lately, and it's one of those things that I get very lost in. And that you love something when you don't notice that you've got 30 emails that came in. It's just you're lost in it. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of writing.
Then what is the essence of recipes for a funner life?
Oh goodness. That is one of those, it's what I would tell a speaker is a throwaway book. It was something that we wanted to put together as a troupe to be able to, in all transparency, sell at our shows, and we did. And so we put together the best improv games, and so now we get to, now I get to say that I'm a published author.
So it's a back of the room sale.
Yes, it
Something they can
is.
take away
I
with
was
them after
definitely
speaking.
practicing what I preach on that one. So it's a fun little book, but by no means is this my legacy piece.
Well, there's two sides of you, as we talked, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show and in the introduction. But if you had to leave the Speakers Bureau world,
Yes.
and you had to, I guess, perform,
Uh-huh.
what would your career be?
Well, it that's a really good question. At this point in my life, I think I know the answer. Maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, I would have said doing, being on SNL or improvising full time. That's not my answer anymore because my life is so different, right? My kids are teenagers and I just want different things now. I think, and then after that, when my kids were younger, I said my dream job would be to teach music at the schools that they were at, but now they're in middle and high school and I don't want any part of that. So I have to plead the I really don't know. Now I'm going to have to think about it. I would definitely be performing and I think singing, and I think what I would actually do right now, you're making me think about this. It's unfair. I think what I would do is I think I would go to school for music again, because I am beyond rusty on all that and I miss it so much. So I think I would go to school.
Voice training,
Yeah.
get you back up to speed.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I would blow the dust off and become the singer that I still think I am in my head.
So, what's next for C Agency? And again, for those that are listening, it's SEE C Agency. What's next for C Agency? Where do you go from here now that you're building up this business?
The 2 points, it's a straight line for us right now. So we are pretty clear on having an elite roster and and I say exclusive, not in the exclusive industry way, but an exclusive as in tight knit. So I don't want to put a number on it, but I'm thinking like 10 or a dozen speakers around there. But our quality of speaker is extraordinarily high now, and that's only going to get higher and higher. So speakers with the highest, honestly, the highest quality speakers in as far as training and materials and longevity. I'd love to keep the same speakers until I retire. So that's where I am right now.
So that's your niche. Your niche is that quality, high quality speaker that your clients want, knowing that even if they get a different speaker from you, it's going to be the same quality speaker that they get no matter who they hire.
Yeah. And there's going to be, I will tell you this, that putting some color around that, we've launched a bit of an initiative, but really it's kind of like nobody's surprised because it's always been who we are. Our mission statement for years has been do good, have fun, make money. We have transitioned in the last year and a half or so through, I guess maybe a heart change or a perspective change, but really using our powers for as much good as possible. So it's do good, have fun, make a difference now. And so the speakers that we work with have a very corporate social impact. And in fact, it's kind of always been that way. That's where my heart's been, but now I'm just realizing that that's who we are as a company. And it's definitely a momentum of the industry. God, it's like not a new concept. And it's Giving Tuesday today, actually, that we're doing this interview. So that's kind of fun. But yeah, so the speakers that I work with and that we work with all have to be real do-gooders.
Well, where can someone find out more about you and your agency?
Our website is probably the best place. So it's seeagency.com.
And then go there and find out everything they want to find out about C Agency and Krista. Well,
Krista,
thank you very much for being a guest on Playmakers Talk Show. You are definitely a playmaker, somebody that makes something happen.
Well, I love it. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. We've been speaking with Krista Haberstock-Colson. Krista is president and founder of C Agency. It's been great having Krista on the show. Thanks to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlayMakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.